Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Off with True Blue LA. It is Monday, October 17th. I'm your host, Eric Steven. Apologies for my throat sounding a little off. I've spent the better part of the last 4 days coughing. But the Dodgers season is shockingly over. We do not have an NLCS preview for you because the Dodgers are not in the NLCS. This is as brutal of a playoff loss, I think, as they've had in this 10-year run. In terms of just shock value, maybe the 2019 series against the Nationals, and they were sort of for different reasons, I guess. But either way, stunning. The Dodgers lost to the Padres in 4 games. After winning the first game of the series, the Dodgers dropped the last three. All three were close games. I believe the entire Dodgers-Padres NLDS was they were not separated by more than 2 runs until the Dodgers pulled ahead 3-0. I think in the sixth inning of the seventh inning of game 4. And then that 3-run lead did not hold up, famously. We'll get to that. So it was a close series all the way around, but the Dodgers lost the last three, so they're done. During the regular season, the Dodgers beat the Padres in all 6 of their series. They won 14 out of 19. But the Dodgers in the playoffs did not play like they did during the regular season. The great Sarah Langs of MLB.com noted that this was only the 4th time in MLB history that a team beat another team in every regular season series that year, a minimum of 4 series here, then lost to them in the playoffs. 3 of the 4 involved the Dodgers. In 1983, the Dodgers were 11-1 against the Phillies, but lost in the NLCS. That's back when the NLCS was best of 5. That was also a 3-1 series. In 1988, the Dodgers were 10-1, the Mets were 10-1 against the Dodgers. The only reason they didn't play 12 games because one of the games was a rainout and they just didn't make it up. But then the Dodgers beat the Mets in the NLCS in 7 games. And then in 1991, the Blue Jays were 8-4 against the Twins. It's sort of fun. I was looking at their sort of game logs there, and they won every series 2-1. But then the Twins beat them in the ALCS and then won their second championship in 5 years in the World Series. So, as always, though, when a loss like this happens, the sort of knives come out. But it's a group effort. There's a lot of blame to go around in a lot of places. I guess, first of all, before we get into sort of the reasons, Jack Harris at the LA Times reported that Dave Roberts is going to be back for 2023. Fabian Ardaya also confirmed that report. Honestly, I wasn't even considering that it was a possibility that Roberts was on the hot seat. I suppose it has to be sort of asked, just given the shocking nature of the early exit, but I didn't think that was a possibility that Roberts would go. He signed an extension this last spring that takes him through 2025. It was a 3-year extension. So, yeah, like, they're not the type to sort of overreact like this. I guess that would be more of an ownership call, I guess, if that something like that happened, I think. But, yeah, it's not going to happen. So just noting that before we get into the sort of how and why the Dodgers lost for anyone who's looking to run Roberts out of town. The offense, for one, did not show up in the series. They scored only 12 runs in 4 games. 5 of those came in the first 3 innings of Game 1. And then 7 runs in the last 32 innings of the series. That's just not good enough to win. Trey Turner, Freddie Freeman, Max Muncy, they all had good series. Turner homered twice and doubled and was generally a pest all the way around. He also had a very bad series defensively, just kind of all over the place. Couple miscues, an error, couple bizarre plays. But overall, offensively, it was really good. The rest of the regulars, though, on offense were bad. Like, Will Smith doubled in his first 2 plate appearances. Then he went 1-for-14. Mookie Betts was 2-for-14 in the series. Justin Turner was 2-for-13. So we talked about over the last few months, the Dodgers were rotating 4 players in between left field and center field. Chris Taylor also got some time at second base, especially when Gavin Lux was out. But how it worked out in the NLDS, Trace Thompson started all 4 games. It was weird, like the one time they sort of fully committed to him was this series. And honestly, so he was the best hitter like of that quartet easily all year, even with the high strikeout rate. Thompson started 4 games, 2 in left, 2 in center. Bellinger started twice in center and Taylor twice in left. Those 3, Thompson, Bellinger, and Taylor combined to go 3-for-27 with 15 strikeouts and 3 walks. All 3 of the walks were by Trace Thompson. Joey Gallo, who played pretty much against pretty much every right-hander the last 2 months for the most part, didn't play at all in the series. Neither did Miguel Vargas, not even as a pinch hitter. Cody Bellinger not starting in Game 3 against the left-hander Blake Snell was expected. But him not starting in Game 4 against Joe Musgrove, a right-hander, was more symbolic than anything. Seems to me that Bellinger is a very likely non-tender candidate. This offseason, I have a roster overview up on the site this morning that you can look at. Shows all the salary arbitration eligible players, the free agents, everyone on the Dodgers 40-man roster heading into the offseason. And Bellinger, MLB Trade Rumors, through their sort of arbitration projections, has 1 more year of arbitration, and they're projecting him to earn about $18 million. Just the nature of the beast, he's a former MVP winner with some good bulk numbers, but has been very bad for 2 straight years now. In that system, it's just not set up to have like massive pay cuts, and so I think it's a situation where there's no way the Dodgers are going to bring him back at that price. So either they work out some deal with him and re-sign him at a reduced rate, but I think more than likely he's just going to be gone and be a free agent. But we'll see. That's what the offseason's for. I don't know what else to say about that. But on the offense, again, during the series, the Dodgers were 5-for-34 with runners in scoring position. That's 147. Their OPS was just under 500. In those situations, just really bad. The Padres had 4 hits with runners in scoring position in the 7th inning of Game 4 alone. That was the inning when they scored 5 runs and put the final nail in the Dodgers' coffin. So the Dodgers are going home, losing the series 3-1. We talked about the offense here. We'll talk a little bit more about on the pitching side, and there's a lot to talk about there. We'll do that after the break.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I think on the pitching side for the Dodgers in the NLDS, there was a lot to be desired there as well. To start off, I know there's a lot to talk about the last two games, but I think they could have gotten better starts at Julio Urias and Clayton Kershaw, to be honest. Both went allowed three runs in five innings in their starts in games one and two. Different fashions. Urias cruised until a three-run fifth inning sort of taxed him and forced his removal. He expended a lot of energy in that fifth inning just to get through it. Kershaw struggled early in his game, three runs in the first three innings. Then he retired his last nine, but again, already spent early. Not to say those starts were bad. Like, it's certainly a winnable game. They won the Urias game, for instance. But, you should get better starts than that from those two guys, I think. So leaving four innings to the bullpen was a cost. And I think one that sort of gradually showed itself over the course of the series. But again, like, offense and pitching kind of feed off each other. So if you're going to like four plus relievers every single game, one of them's bound to have a bad night. It's not reasonable to expect zeros every single night from the bullpen, even though that's what the Padres basically got from their bullpen. They allowed one run in 16 innings. So that's why they're moving on and not the Dodgers. So, but if the offense isn't scoring enough and each game is tight, every little bullpen misstep gets magnified. So, like in game two, Kershaw left tied when Bruiser Gratterall gave up an unearned run in the sixth, and then a rusty Blake Treinen, who only pitched five games all year and was pitching his first game in like over five weeks, allowed a home run in the eighth to sort of provide the final winning margin. They lost 5-3 in that game. But I think most of the pitching hubbub revolves around the decision to go with Tony Gonsolin in Game 3 instead of Tyler Anderson. Now, Gonsolin missed 6 weeks with a left forearm strain. He last pitched on August 23rd before he came back and had one final regular season tune-up. On October 3rd, he pitched two innings there and then another inning in the bullpen, very spring training style, building up. He also threw four innings in a simulated game over the weekend at Dodger Stadium when the Dodgers were off. And then... At most, Gonsolin was going to go 75 pitches. Five innings was like best-case scenario. And the thought process to use Gonsolin before Tyler Anderson is that Game 3 was the first day after the travel day, and you have a full bullpen at your disposal to back him up. So it makes intuitive sense, but it also comes, like we mentioned, with a cost. So I think where the mistake was underestimating the potential of a bad start from Gonsolin in his second game in 7 weeks. So there's a much higher likelihood of Gonsolin delivering a clunker and forcing yourself into an elimination game in Game 4 just to get to Game 5 rather than go with Anderson, who's been the most consistent performer all year, and try to take the series lead. So Gonsolin was very bad. He needed 31 pitches to get out of the first. He recorded only four outs. He was lucky to only allow one run. Andrew Heaney escaped his jam in the second. He pitched admirably in bulk relief, escaping Gonsolin's and his own jams. He allowed one run in three innings, but that got the Dodgers into the fifth inning at least, and they had to fill the rest of the way with the bullpen. So you can look at, in one way, you can look at Game 3 and say, well, hey, the Dodgers only allowed two runs. This gambit clearly worked, which is understandable. They lost 2-1 because the offense wasn't hitting. Again, so I think, but the cost really comes from game three, came in game four. So Anderson delivered the best pitching performance of the series, going five scoreless innings. Now you can argue in a 2-0 game, the Dodgers were ahead. Anderson's at 86 pitches. He could have started the sixth inning at least to face Juan Soto for the lefty-lefty matchup, but I don't think he would have been left in to like face Machado, so I sort of get why they pulled him at right after five innings there. I get it. However, so they got through the sixth with Chris Martin. There's also the case that maybe Chris Martin could have gone a second inning, but in the fateful five-run seventh inning, you had Tommy Kahnle, Yency Almonte, and Alex Vesia. They all allowed run-scoring hits. All were pitching on their second day in a row. Kahnle was pitching on back-to-back days for just the second time in the majors all year. He missed the bulk of the year with elbow issues, and he was also coming off Tommy John surgery. Yency Almonte struck out the first five batters faced in the series before Game 4, was in just his seventh game and his first back-to-back outing since missing 2 months with elbow tightness. So, you know, that's where you're sort of at there. I think the margins for the pitching staff were also very thin, because the Dodgers left runners in scoring position in the first, third, sixth, and seventh innings of Game 4. Like, they could have been up much more than 3-0 that they were in the seventh of that weekend. So, like, yeah, it's just a rough weekend all the way around, no doubt about it. 111 wins during the regular season. They laid an absolute egg in the postseason. There's no other way to put it, right? So one of the things I was sort of seeing around the reaction to this, I'm not buying, at least not yet, that the new format and the long layoff was the reason for the Dodgers' struggles. I mean, they got 5 days off for their first playoff game, so you could argue there's some rest there. Both the Dodgers and the 101-win Braves both lost the NLDS in four games. That leaves the NLCS as the 89-win Padres against the 87-win Phillies. The 99-win Yankees are going to a fifth game later today against the Guardians in the ALDS. The Astros were the only home team to do well in their division series, and even they needed two comeback wins at home to beat the Mariners and then 17 innings in Game 3. So that was a close series. But so I think the thing that I don't buy the rust and the layoff was that the best the Dodgers looked was at the start of Game 1. So they definitely weren't rusty out of the gate. They scored five runs in the first three innings. Urias was cruising through his four, and then things went south, and they just never sort of got out of it, really. I think the Dodgers, you know, it's more – they had every advantage in the series. They had home field. The pitching was set up how they wanted. Had it gone to a game five, arrested Urias would have been against lessened Yu Darvish on short rest. Instead, Darvish is going to start game one of the NLCS. So they just didn't play well enough. That's really what it comes down to. I know this might not be a satisfying explanation, but that's what it is. They have to live with that all offseason, which now is much longer than expected. So that's it for today's leading off. We'll have another episode of the lineup with me and Jacob Birch later this week. Outside of that, we're going to take a little break here on the podcast now that the season's over, but thanks for listening. And we'll be back with you later this week.